Welcome to Heal and Go Public with Karen Hibner. Picture this. I sit in a large, open, airy, almost breezy warehouse on one of those little gray artist stools at a massive work table. You crack the door open, I turn with a welcoming and knowing smile on my face. I gently but joyfully wave for you to come in, and there's a stool set up for you. I ask you, what do you want to create or recreate today? I've built this studio to be a judgment-free space, a space that you can expand and expand and expand in, a space where you can surprise yourself with what you can build. We are all continually creating ourselves, who we are and how we are. I believe our own creative process is the door to our healing. I believe sharing our creations is often the access point to healing for others. I believe in healing and going public. I'm your creative guide, Karen Hibner. I'm an artist, podcast producer and editor, and former spiritual director. Let's explore what it means to create. Let's wonder at what it means to heal and go public. Hey everyone, thanks as always for listening. I'm glad you're here. Also, I want to name it here. Thanks for listening to so many interviews here in this space. I've connected with so many incredible people recently, and with my latest business pivot and focus, I'm still wondering exactly how I want to use this space and what I want to give to you. Rest assured, the plan is not to give an interview every time, all the time. I promise you will start hearing some of my own ruminations again in this space. I will keep you posted. I hope you're having a wonderful fall. I hope you're experiencing all the goodness of the season that you can access, and that you're creating the space you need to process the deeper invitations and noticings of the season. But here we are today, already entering into November. I cannot even believe it. I have a great conversation with you today. All the way from Scotland, I have Anne Diamond. Anne and I have had the absolute pleasure of getting to know one another a bit and talk art and healing. I thought it would be powerful for us to share the art and healing conversations with you. Let me formally introduce you to Anne via her bio. Anne Diamond has spent most of her adult life not only trying to understand why she was burning out, but how to prevent it happening again. She now campaigns, trains, and coaches on creating resilience and smashing stigma about mental health, and has written a book, Turning the Tables on Burnout, to share her tips. Anne has over 20 years' experience in managing workplace well-being, reaching the top of her profession as a Chartered Fellow, CFIOSH, and now gives back by mentoring women in safety leadership roles and judging an International Workplace Safety Award. In 2019, she took a grown-up gap year and went back to art college for a life-changing 2 years that led to a whole new career as a creative changemaker. She is an accredited advanced EFT practitioner and resilience coach, drawing on her lived experience of mental health stigma and recovering from PTSD and depression caused by surviving multiple adverse childhood experiences. Anne offers transformational group and personal coaching, as well as sustaining a socially engaged creative practice as an artist, poet, social justice campaigner, and performer. Her work includes teaching personalized health conversation skills as an ambassador for the Personalized Care Institute and working with local authorities to reduce health inequities by getting creative about how we look at health and well-being. Help me welcome Anne to Heal and Go Public. Enjoy the show. Anne, I'm so thrilled to be with you today. Thank you for being here. I can't wait to see what comes out of this conversation. There are just so many intersections that you and I have as far as art, healing through art, and then also sharing that art, sharing your story, going public in all of these different ways. So I'm just really thrilled to hear about you, what you offer to others in the world, and also your own healing journey and your own process through creative works. So Anne, thanks for being here with us.
Thank you so much for inviting me. It's a real pleasure and honor to be here, Karen. Thank you.
Thanks. So, Anne, can you give us just a little bit of a rundown? I mean, I always ask this, who are you? That's such a massive question, but who are you and what do you do in this world? What do you offer to folks?
That's a really interesting question. Yeah, it's real. We could be talking all hours for that. My name's Anne Diamond. I am based in Somerset in the UK, in the mystical town of Avalon, Glastonbury in Avalon. And I call myself a creative change maker. And that's sounds like a bit of an intriguing name, but it sort of encompasses the creative side and the well-being side, because I've combined a career of over 20 years in health and safety and well-being with the amazing power of the creative practices to support health and well-being. So I've just basically combined the things that I know support my well-being and have supported my healing journey into a career that helps other people too.
Wow, incredible. Thank you. And I know that that is such a like synthesized version of what you do and where you've been. But can you give us a little bit around like your journey and what's led you to where you are now, which I know is also another massive question, but how have you kind of combined these two worlds and what were those worlds?
Yeah, that's kind of why I wrote a book about it, because there's so much to tell. But yeah, I had quite a traumatic childhood. Quite a lot of adverse childhood experiences. If anyone knows anything about adverse childhood experiences, I scored 9 on that list. So quite a high, I don't know, I'm not going to go into detail about all of them, but I didn't realise how that impacted my mental health until I was diagnosed with complex PTSD when I was 38. And that's after I'd started my own family and I'd struggled all the way through my teens and 20s and 30s with mental health challenges, breakdowns, anxiety, depression. And I realized that the career I was in health and safety was because I was trying to keep others safe because I didn't feel safe myself. And I was good at it because I was really hypervigilant and all the things that come with PTSD. So, you know, I was great at my job. And it was in a period of, and I was off work for about 9 months after one particular breakdown. And that was a combination of my own mental health challenges, a few bereavements in my life that happened sequentially, and bullying at work, because health and safety is a challenging job. And if management don't like what you're doing or uncovering bad practices, they, you know. So anyway, so I was off work for 9 months and I connected with an art group, local art group, and realized that actually I was doing it to support a neighbour who couldn't drive, and I was taking her along just to help her out, but actually realised it was actually supporting my well-being immensely, just being creative, being in flow, just absorbing yourself in the painting rather than the things that are going on. I call it the radio station in my head. I wrote a poem about it, but it's basically a radio station. You can't turn it off because it's all these constant thoughts if you're hypervigilant. So yeah, I ended up as part of my return to work process because the workplace I was at the time said they couldn't do anything about my manager, which obviously I now know is wrong. So they want to reduce my exposure to the stressor. They recommend, I said, well, could I cut my hours and go to art class once a week? So that was the start of my journey into using creativity as a healing tool. And over a period of 10 years, I developed my art practice. And then it got to a very stressful stage in my life, relocation, lots of care and responsibilities. Both my parents in law died within the space of 12 months. Very traumatic time for all of us. And I was still doing health and safety, but a lot of traveling. And then I decided in 2019 that actually, this isn't for me anymore. I'm burning out. I keep burning out. I'm burning out. Why am I burning out? Because I'm not managing the stress. Mm. And I went back to art college when I was 48 and took an art and design foundation. And that was the turning point in my life, because all the time I'd been fearful about making mistakes, fearful about getting things wrong. Obviously, in health and safety, you can't really make mistakes, but you're always looking for other people making mistakes. And that went back to all the childhood stuff, you know, about trying to be good, trying not to cause arguments, trying not to have conflict. And I discovered that it was okay to make mistakes. It was okay to express yourself authentically and be yourself uniquely, because the joy of creativity is we don't do everything exactly the same. We do it through our own lens. And that turned it around. You know, my life has turned around. And at the same time, I discovered EFT tapping, emotional freedom technique, to help a friend out who was a practitioner who was training. And that made such significant impact on my trauma at the time that I trained as a practitioner myself. So I've been on a journey for the last 5 years training as a practitioner. I'm now an advanced accredited practitioner. And those two things combined have helped me enormously to clear my PTSD responses.
Wow. Thank you so much. And there's so much in there that I could ask around. I hear the like hypervigilant mind and how active it is. I heard that the painting is what helped quiet also. I heard lack of support and understanding in a workplace that also led to continued burnout after maybe noticing that things needed to change. I just hear so much. And I resonate on some levels to whatever level I can, having my own journey and having my own story, right? Of even the other day, I've always been a runner of some level and some form. And lately, I've had to stop a lot while running. And I finally figured it out the other day. And I told my husband, like, the thoughts are just so loud. I'm like, I need a different practice right now. Something that helps kind of quiet those things versus like ramps them up, or, you know, and that this is all something that could be a different conversation, but just resonating with that hypervigilant mind. I also hear burnout, and burnout in a corporate sphere where you had to fight and advocate for yourself and find what you needed, and the art was there for you, and that it kind of happenstance, like through supporting a neighbor. That's incredible. And then going back and pursuing your own art degree at 48, did you say?
All the other students looked at me like I said I was their mother or their grandmother. So, quite an interesting experience. But I kind of got more out of it, I think, than I felt I'd gone when I was 17. Because I was there. I really wanted to be there. And I had already had pretty much all the material for all the projects, because I was literally just expressing my life experience. So it was very therapeutic.
That's so incredible. So tell me a little bit about this. Might be a little bit of a side journey for us, but your current works, like your current art practice, what kind of, you said that you wrote a poem about something, you mentioned painting. What are kind of the media that you find yourself within?
That was the other thing that I discovered when I went to art college, was because for the first 10 years, I was thought of art as painting and drawing. And I thought, you had to do something that was a finished, you know, you had to make something that looked like something, and really still attached the, you know, a part of my worth as how good the art was, and, you know, didn't like showing it very much, and didn't, you know. And when I went was at college, it was discovered a whole different world, like ceramics, textiles, a graphic design, animation, you know, just a mixing things, collage. So I delved into collage because I love that. You just, you know, become a little bit of a magpie, don't you? Just grab everything. My husband gets very frustrated because don't throw anything away now. It's like, I use that for my art. So, you know, you can use all sorts of things for different mark making tools or for collage. And poetry has emerged quite strongly. I've been quite heavily involved in quite a few poetry projects recently, especially particularly during lockdown. You know, that was really helpful, online poetry groups. But sort of parallel in the last 10 years, I've been in a band with my husband, who's a songwriter. And so he expresses himself through his lyrics. And they're not simple songs. They're quite wordy songs. And they're usually about social justice or some sort of historical thing. So it's, you know, I've been expressing his words through the music. So I kind of naturally started expressing my own words now through poetry. And that links into performance poetry as well. So, you know, having a voice, which is nice.
Wow. Which is so challenging for some folks from challenging backgrounds to have a voice and to find that voice.
Yeah, because, you know, if you spoke out, you were shouted at or sworn at or somehow, you know, punished. So, yeah, yes. having that voice is really, it's a sign that, you know, the recovery process is progressing.
Yeah. On that note, did you always identify as a creative individual or as a creative person? Or was that something that really came out of that healing journey? That, I mean, kind of, it sounds like it was from a need-based place of like hitting, like almost like not to say rock bottom, but like hitting a crisis mode of burnout and finding this creative outlet. But did you always identify as a creative person or was that something that was new to you and opening?
I didn't identify as a creative, but looking back, I did enjoy doing art at school. So I studied it for my GCSEs, which, you know, the first lot of exams I did. And that was actually what I used to do to get away at home. I'd sit in my room and draw. And then I sort of left that behind when I went to university. But then I took two degrees. My first degree was applied biology, and a large component of that was looking down microscopes and drawing what you saw. So it was very observational drawing. So you're drawing things down a microscope, and I used to do mind maps to remember things. So I guess I was creative, but didn't associate that with being, you know, I learned in a visual manner. So yeah, but I didn't. And then obviously, when you start working, I didn't. But then I did actually. This is really interesting because I'm connecting the dots here. So thank you, Karen.
Yeah.
One of the things I did when I graduated in Scotland, I studied in the beautiful city of Edinburgh. If you've ever been to Edinburgh, you know, many people go there to study and never leave. And that's what happened to me. I went to study for my master's degree and ended up living there for 20 years.
I volunteered with a charity called the Green Team, which was delivering a thing called the John Muir Award, which took young people out into the wilds of Scotland on weekends to do conservation tasks and connect with nature. But also we did environmental art, and I used to love those activities. So we'd go to a beach, or, you know, we'd make stone sculptures or things with branches and get the young people to connect with nature in that way. In the philosophy of John Muir, he was responsible for founding the national parks in the United States, but he was a native of Scotland. So actually, thinking about it, yes, I was creative through my 20s, but then I didn't think of myself as a creative at the time because I was a scientist and then health and safety. And then obviously when I had my family with my girls, I used to love doing creative things with them, but making cakes and decorating them. Was terrible at face painting, and my girls keep reminding me of that. I wasn't great. I'm so face painting, not my strength. But yeah, creating cakes and things like that. So I guess I have always been creative, but not really thought of myself as creative.
Wow. That's incredible. And I have a side note question for you. Are either of your daughters like artistic or have your artistic tendencies?
That's another good question. They are really good at art. But they never chose to study at school because they weren't confident. And the way they teach art in schools isn't supportive of creative process.
Yes.
So, I mean, they're very lucky that they've obviously got, we've got a music studio at home and we've got an art studio in my house. And whenever they were getting stressed or whatever during their studies, they'd go up to the art room and just make something. So, and obviously with cooking as well. But actually, interestingly, my oldest daughter, she never really wouldn't let anyone see anything she drew or string. She was very shy about it. But since she started university, the college she's at Cambridge University here in the UK, they've got an amazing room where they can just, with filled with art supplies for the students to go into. And she sent a picture when she, you know, she's only been there in her first year. And she said, look what I've done, Mum. And she'd made a lino print. She'd just never done lino printing before. She made her own lino print of this IKEA teddy, a big, huge teddy that she got on Christmas. And she'd done a lino print of this just for fun.
Wow.
And I was so proud. I was like, wow, you did that. And she said, I found it, her and her friends went like after lectures just to relax. And she's also done a painting as well. So yeah, it's interesting that they've just naturally migrated to that because they find it relaxing.
Yes, which is like something that you set up in your ecosystem as they were growing up and like in your atmosphere. So then it becomes natural for them. And that's something that like we are very mindful of right now. I have a 4-year-old. And so what are we kind of making a part of our ecosystem? Where do we go when we're stressed? Like, and how do mommy and daddy do that? And what do we offer her as options as she's processing her big emotions as 4-year-olds have? So that's super interesting that you're seeing with, you know,
know, adult children play out. So, but also I resonate with that. I've been getting into lino cutting and lino printing. I haven't made my first print yet. I'm sure I've made prints like way back when, but this is just self-guided.
Potato prints. You must have done potato prints as a kid. I mean, that's lino print. Beginners 101, isn't it?
Yes. Yeah. Yes, absolutely. I'm sure I've done it before, but just carving away and like learning these new tools and everything has just been a really, I just love doing processes that I'm on in the digital space so much that having these processes mm-hmm. that are very manual is really important for me. So, and the other day it was amazing. I just have to tell you this little anecdote because it might make you smile, but we were out in the front yard the other day and the front garden, y'all might say, my daughter found a mushroom in the lawn. And so she wanted to pick it and bring it into the house and make art from it. And I was like, great, what do you want to make? And she's 4 years old. She said she wanted to make a print with the mushroom. And so we popped off the stem and we made some, we used my supplies that I hadn't quite broken into yet and allowed her to print some mushroom cap prints. And it was just, oh, it was so beautiful. So, which that's on the Instagram if anybody wants to go see.
I was
going to
say, I saw that on Instagram.
Did you see it?
Smiling away. I was thinking that's amazing.
It was such a gift. And for her, for it to be completely self-guided and something that we could just say yes to. Like, yes, real quick, we'll get the supplies out. We'll do this because you want to. Then she wanted to do leaf rubbings. Then she wanted to do all of the stuff, right? And we were like getting dinner ready. Blah, blah, blah. We'll do leaf rubbings next. This show is brought to you by my podcast editing business. Do what you came here to do, which probably wasn't podcast editing. Sharing your particular magic by going public through podcasting helps others sink into their own special kind of magic. Then we all heal this world together. We need your voice. We need your story and what you have to offer this world. I work with coaches, activists, spiritual directors, therapists, authors, and all kinds of creatives to help them get their particular wonderful out to the world. Through podcasting, my clients are able to give freely some of their greatest offerings in order to grow their audience, land more clients, and nurture those clients. My clients' audiences get to know them, get to feel what it's like to work with them, and build an actual connection and relationship. Y'all, voices are amazing. By waiting on your files, I help keep you accountable to creating powerful content for your audience. I help you to continue nurture your audience and care for the people in your orbit. Also, let's be real, by creating this regular content, you're getting way more hands-on and keeping the pulse of your business and your audience. Side note, content that we can then repurpose for all your other platforms you feel like you have to be on. If you've been editing yourself, I save you massive amounts of time and allow you to speak freely. No more worrying or stressing while you're recording about having to go back and edit it or starting over or having to pause or having to stop and edit your thoughts while you're talking. By refining your recordings and beautifully packaging them, I help you deliver high quality, high value content to your audience and current and future clients that changes who and how they are, which changes the world. Schedule a free 1 hour discovery call with me today. I'll help you define your goals and intentions for your show, your greatest challenges, and your greatest wins in the space, and how to continue creating a show that is in perfect alignment with who and how you are. I also offer consult calls and podcast strategy packages. Get on my schedule for your free discovery call today at karenhibner.com or through the link in the show notes. Now let's get back to it. On that note, I think you watching, kind of seeing that legacy point of something that you've offered to your children, mm-hmm. as far as art being something that you can turn to, that's such a marker and such a, like, such a big offering from your own journey and your own life to others. But I wonder at just what did, flashing back a little bit to whatever is comfortable being a trauma-informed space, right? Yeah. What did that paint, like that original painting processing, that original class that you're going to, what did that creative process allow you to access that maybe you weren't able to access in the other spaces? Like, and I'm not looking for your specific stories. We don't need to dig into your details or your nitty-gritty, sure. But just what were you able to access through that creative process that allowed healing in this space?
Well, it's given myself permission to be creative, which was great because I was actually at art college. I was paying for it and I was, you know, 3 or 4 days a week for 2 years. And I think one of the biggest turnaround projects was, it was a project called Then and Now. We had to respond to that brief. And there was an old rocking chair that when we moved to look after my mother and father-in-law, they lived on a farm, and there was this old rocking chair just the bay. There was no cushion. The cushion was all trash because it'd been in the wood store. It'd been left in the wood store. Mm. And my husband said, oh, that was his grandmother's rocking chair. And that had been put in the wood store literally about, I think, the same year I was born. It'd been there for like nearly 50 years, this rocking chair, just been left, you know. And I said, I'd love to renovate that chair. And I came up with this idea of sitting in the present and rocking back to the past. So I used that as a basis for this project. So I, you know, did all the textiles techniques and screen printing and stitching and embroidery. And I made the panel at the back, the bit that you lean back into, in five panels, and one for each decade of my life. And that was my empowered moment to tell my own story, with printed photographs and stitched from different events of those different decades in my own words. And it was so interesting because I got to choose what I put on each of those panels, and I got to choose how I represented it. And it was great. And I've still got it in my room. I see it every day. And that is like three. So I sit in the present, and I chose for the present a lotus flower because a lotus flower has got so many symbolic meanings, you know, about rebirth and growth and renewal. And so, yeah, and that's, and just stitching it, mindfully stitching the lotus flower through the winter was incredible. And obviously we're recording this now in September, and one of the panels in there was my visit to New York 2 weeks before 9/11. And so I stitched the Twin Towers in there as a really powerful symbol, because that was quite a traumatic moment for me. Obviously going back home, I'd been there and walked around the place. And obviously I felt for the people who were there, and I had a friend who worked on the airline. So all those different moments in time, you know, I just managed to choose how I represented them.
Wow. Rick, I love that you're accessing, I mean, you said it, you became in the seat of the storyteller, essentially. You became the decider on what your story was and how you got to present it. And that's a really power-filled and powerful space. Can also be extraordinarily intimidating, but what it makes me think of too is all of the work that had to come before that moment. Mm-hmm. Which is probably also all of the, like, I mean, doing all of the paperwork to get in school, committing to the money, like all of those things, right? But you mentioned before that, especially if being a person that experienced CPTSD and looking at your journey of being able to make mistakes with that hypervigilant mind, right? Mm-hmm. So that was kind of, to me, a predecessor, a precursor to that permission, that creative permission, right? Or intertwined somehow, because you cannot have that creative permission without that permission to also make mistakes and then becoming the teller of the story, because you have to be able to get the story wrong by other standards, that it's just, you know, it's your story and it's how you're telling it.
I was also terrified of using a sewing machine because I was terrible at HE when I was at school. You know, I managed to stitch my own thumb to the skirt I was making. That's how bad I was at sewing. So it was another thing to overcome as well.
Yes. This is so funny because I'm literally terrified of sewing machines, and I have all of these visions of quilts that I want to make, like art quilts.
Yeah.
And my daughter and I have been working on one for a while, and I'm working on it. I'm like terrified of the needle for some reason, which I like don't have a needle fear, but when it's like being run by a machine, it seems a little bit more intense. And it also just makes me think of last week, I wrapped a video project for someone, and there's two edits that I still keep thinking about, two edits that I could have like made better. And I know that if I gave all of the time in the world to it, I could have made it a little bit better, but it's just something that I've had to learn. Like, it's amazing what we can access through these creative processes, and especially through my business versus my own artwork, as far as having deadlines that I have to deliver things on, which is not different than having to get ready for a gallery show or for a deadline with school, which was, I guess, kind of an amazing part of school because our project turnaround was so quick. I don't know if you experienced that as well, but it was so quick that, I mean, you had to come up with concept so quickly, and then execution, like if you didn't come up with concept like within a day or two, then like your execution like really, really suffered from that, you know? But anyway, this video project haunting me a little bit and just noticing how much work that I've done and being able to make mistakes and deliver things that are less than perfect. Mm-hmm. I really had to reflect on it and was like, oh, a couple of years ago, if I had done this video project for someone and noticed that there were those two spots that I really wanted to get that audio a little bit better, I would have logged more hours on it and probably just not charged them for those hours because I felt bad, like it was my error, it was my da 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 da. But growing into a space of that, like, we are all human, we are all doing these things, we are all doing the best we can, and that working with time constraints decides what the output can be sometimes, and that that's okay. So I just am resonating with the levels of like getting okay with making mistakes and then getting comfortable with the creative permission. And I hate the word comfortable. I mean, getting more safe with that creative permission, right? And then being able to tell your story. I am also interested, Anne, in if we can bring this to this, you essentially work with two mediums to pursue your own healing and then also to maybe offer healing to others as far as EFT and art making. If we can look at those at two different mediums, can you tell me, is there any intersection or bridge between the two that you see or that you find?
Well, it you've just given me a perfect introduction there because what the example you've just given, I mean, if there was a point where you're being perfectionist or you have imposter syndrome about the work you're doing, you know, you can just tap on it and tap on what feelings are coming up for you in that moment. You know, EFT is about connecting with emotions in your body. So if you're in a creative process or in any process, if you have strong emotions coming up and you sense it's a strong feeling about not serving your clients well or not serving yourself well, and, you know, thinking about, well, what meaning am I attaching to this? So that's where you start tapping. So even though I'm feeling really quite frustrated that I didn't do those edits, I could have got it better. You know, I accept myself or I'm safe here and now. And you can tap on that and reduce that intensity and unpeel the onion layers about what's actually behind that. And it's really understanding. It's about understanding yourself better. And that we call it the writing on your walls. And what I love about EFT is I can bring my creativity into it because when I'm working with clients, we have some amazing creative visualization exercises. And, you know, I can be there with the client. And if they're disassociated in any way because of, you know, anything they've experienced when they're younger, we can bring in their inner child. So we can bring in their younger selves to the point where they're disassociated. And obviously that's very intense work. So you have to be very careful with that. But I've had some amazing experiences with clients with their younger selves and a dog they've brought in or some other character from a movie that they like. And they're there repainting or redecorating their palette of possibilities, we call it. So it's the belief systems they've formed or have been formed by their families or society. And they've just rewritten it all and said, I choose now to have it this way. And then walk out the door and, you know, they've cleared decades of trauma and limiting beliefs just through a creative visualization. And that's where the creativity and the EFT intersect. It's amazing.
That's really powerful. It also makes me think of, this might be completely random, but when I was working with the last therapist I was working with, we were doing some ART, which is a kind of a subset of EMDR, like a light EMDR essentially, but really working with kind of my childhood bedroom that was kind of a sanctuary for me. And it has spurred so many art projects that I want to make and almost this iconography kind of that I want to make for that period of life and then what the meaning is now. And then even through, so what makes me think of too is in the ART process, there was like painting over, like picking colors and painting over like this room or these walls or these memories even that existed in my mind. But that sounds so incredibly powerful. And still using that creativity, like you said, as far as the visualizations, using that creative mind, that imagination, but to do really deep healing work, like inviting the inner child in, dealing with trauma, past beliefs, limiting beliefs, all of those things.
I just want to add to that because, you know, the what we just talked about being scared of getting things wrong and making mistakes, when I'm working with clients, it's very intuitive work. And you can't do that type of work if you're scared of getting things wrong or scared of asking the wrong question. So the biggest part of being an EFT practitioner is getting yourself out of the way. And it's a very strange thing, but the clients that come to me are coming with things that resonate with me as well. So they can come with, like, so it could be something in my subconscious that I'm concerned about, and a client will start suddenly come with that question. So I have to keep myself out of the way, but know that that actually inside, that's clearing it for me too. I'm having to ask the right questions for the client. And you can't be intuitive and ask those questions if you're worried about getting it wrong. Do you see what I mean? You have to allow and trust. You have to trust that you're asking the right question.
Yeah,
because you get in a flow and you get in the, you know, you get in that. So it's really interesting. And yes. And we also, you know, we use things like the movie technique. So we'll get a client to, if there's a particularly traumatic, like a, say, for example, involved in a road traffic accident or some traumatic incident, without re-traumatizing the individual, you can say, okay, well, let's go to that point, and they can stop the movie at any time, and they can choose who plays them in the movie. And there's all sorts of really wonderfully imaginative techniques we can use. So yeah, it's very creative.
Wow, that's amazing. And then using the tapping techniques as a kind of nervous system technique to create safety, and I was going to say comfortability again, but really just to create safety in the space, to tell the body and signify to the body that you're safe, right?
It's a somatic practice. So basically it's the physical tapping of the acupressure points send electrical signals to the amygdala in the brain, the stress response center in the brain, and tune it down. I liken it to a dimmer switch. So it tunes down that emotional intensity of whatever you're thinking about. And actually last week I did some training with an organization called the Peaceful Heart Network, who are doing incredible work in war zones, Rwanda, the Congo, and with child soldiers, with people in prison, with survivors of genocide. And they don't even talk when they're tapping. They just do silent, just tapping. And just the physical action of tapping can help the person, because in many cases, the person doesn't want to talk about what they've experienced because that re-traumatizes them. So, you know, it's really just a physical action of tapping can actually have a therapeutic effect as well.
Wow. Yes. And that's a friend of mine. I just wrapped up this therapeutic writing program, this 8-week program with my friend that's a therapist. And we would start each session with tapping just silently together. And we could just look at like where she was. And then also she would guide us that if there was a space that was particularly responding to the tapping, to stay there instead of moving on with her. And we would just do that for a few minutes right before the writing session, and seeing how this is that's an exact use of like kind of both of your worlds that you're bridging also as far as using the tapping. But then we were just, it was a free write essentially based off of, she would read some poetry to us and then we would just write it out. And yes. And I still had such an emotional response to, we had to read them aloud also. And reading them aloud, oh my goodness, I couldn't read one without just like crying. But to use the tapping to get safe in the space first. Yeah. So that then I could access what I needed to access to be able to get out when I needed to get out without putting all of the limiters on it, right?
Yeah. And these therapies and these methods have been around for thousands of years, but Western society and science are just catching up with how they're obsessed with understanding how it works. They just don't trust it, you know. It's EFT's got, there's a really, really, there's a massively increase in evidence base now. Dr. Peter Stapleton and Dawson Church and people like that have done some amazing work to actually get the scientific credibility for these processes. So it's a bit less woo now. It's actually evidence based. But, you know, breath work as well, there's a lot of evidence. So, tapping and breathing, and how I explain it is, if you're being creative and you're in flow, you know, they talk about three brain models. So you've got your primitive lizard brain, as they call it, you know, that's just the brain stem that's your stress. It's connected to all your senses and it's the one that's on alert all the time to keep you safe. And then you've got your emotional brain or your monkey brain, you know, the one that sort of primates and us have. But then you've got the prefrontal cortex, which is the more advanced brain, which is your thinking and problem-solving brain. And that's what lights up when you're being creative. So by definition, if you're being creative, you're safe because the brain doesn't allow you to get to that bit point unless it's gone through the other two parts of your brain.
Wow. Wow, that's super helpful. That's wild. So, and I feel like you and I could just chat forever. Is there anything else that you would like to share with us that we haven't gotten to today before I ask you how we can connect with you or how we can work with you?
Well, basically, I've combined all everything that we've talked about into a book that I've written called Turning the Tables on Burnout. And I've called it Turning the Tables on Burnout because that's one of the other analogies that we use in the EFT practice, is that you think of your beliefs as tabletops and the legs of the table are things that have been programmed into you by your caregivers or your society or you know, the experiences you've had. And to challenge those beliefs, because our brains are plastic, you know, neuroplasticity is a thing now. Everyone knows how neuroplasticity works now. It's accepted it works. And you talked about EMDR, that's a way of rewiring your brain to reframe things. And the tabletops that basically say that we burn out because we're weak or we can't take stress or we can't handle work. I'm on a mission to smash that because burnout is not about individuals. Resilience is an abused word. Resilience, I'm not going to go too deep into this, but resilience is okay. You know, there are lots of things that can make me more resilient, but burnout is a symptom of unmanaged workplace stress. So, you know, that's what I'm passionate about sharing, and to say that anyone who's feeling burnt out, you know, you are not weak, you are not a failure. It's about your work, and that's what I'm trying to help people. So all these other techniques I bring into my coaching practice and help people break free from that cycle, because if you burn out once, you're going to burn out again, and adverse childhood experiences, neurodiversity, other things can actually make you more vulnerable to burnout, and it's time we understood that and reduce the stigma, basically. That's really what I want to get across.
Oh, yes. Thank you. And I don't have a corporate background necessarily. And so I can't speak to that side of it. But from an entrepreneurial journey, this is true of that workplace as well. Mm-hmm. Even though we're the ones saying what needs to be done, what needs to get done, in what manner, by what timeline, all of that, that we then also have those past hurts and those past narratives that are informing those timelines and those to-dos and those, you know, I need to show up so that I prove who I am and who I need to be, right? All of those things. So I think I can really get on a pedestal as far as our businesses are also a microcosm for healing, because everything from our past, everything that comes into who and how we are, shows up in that microcosm of our businesses. And I can really see how that would show up in workplace also. And then with the added, like all of the workplace, the interpersonal dynamics and all of the things that I'm sure you could navigate and speak about much better than I can, because I lack experience there. But yes, just to say, like, I know that a lot of folks in my audience are creatives and creative business owners and all of that. And all of this still stands for them as well, even though they're the boss saying what needs to be done. The burnout in the entrepreneurial spaces is just epidemic.
Well, it is, and particularly quite many of those businesses are online, because the pressure to create and create content and to show up and to, you know, to the goalposts keep changing. You know, how do you get reach on these different platforms? You have to keep changing. So, you know, it's constantly, and it's going back to that link is I am not, you know, people that I am not how successful my business is. You as an individual are not how many likes you have, how many, you know, you are not how much, what your bank account is. It's going back to what you believe at the core you are. And yes, it's great to have a successful business. It's great to, you know, to have all these achievements. But it's what you believe about yourself and how, if you're good enough. It's about being good enough. That's the core. It's am I good enough?
Yes. And all of that for some of us takes so much supported inner work. Definitely. With folks like you. So if someone is interested in what you're saying and talking about, how can people get in touch with you? How can people follow your story? How can people work with you? Tell us a little bit about it.
So yeah, I'm a bit of a mixed bag, but my Instagram is Anne Diamond Artist, and that's my creative work. And I talk about my burnout work on there too. Burnout book is on my website, Work Safe and Well, which I'll share the link obviously in the thing. And if you just want EFT just on its own, because I bring EFT into my burnout coaching, but if you want an EFT session, I'm creative leader EFT. So I'll share the links with you in the notes.
Yes, of course. Those will definitely be in those show notes. And thank you so much for being here. Thank you for what you shared of your own story, your own processing, and the stories of your family and what you've offered to them through turning to art in stress. And thank you for sharing your book with the world. I can't wait to see it. Hey, creator, I'm glad you're here. Healing through creating and going public with our wild and wonderful creations is challenging. But I'm here for you, and I'm totally with you. In a sense, I am you. Head over to the website at karenhinmer.com or the show notes to get on the email list. By being on my email list, you receive more from me all about healing through creating and connecting through going public. And you get to follow along and allow me to be your creative guide on how I heal and go public as a creator. Join me. Head to karenhubner.com, that's CARINHUEBNER.com, or head to the show notes to get on that email list. Thanks for listening. And don't forget, hit that rate and review button while you're here. I would love your feedback. And it helps other people find the show so that they can feel like they have a creative guide on this healing and go public journey. Thanks for being here. Bye.